Hello, Degrassi alumni, and we're back. We are back again. We will always be back, far past the point that you want us to be coming back. I am Shane Kipple, Gavin Spinner Mason,
and I am Mike Lobel, aka Jay Hogart. Welcome to another installment of Degrads, folks. Today we've got an exciting episode. It must be springtime at Degrassi, right?
Love is in the air.
It certainly is. This is one of those stories. I think you and I have been there. We all know this one, when a crush turns into something real.
Yes.
And then suddenly you're not daydreaming anymore. You're in it.
Yes. And sometimes very quickly you realize that whoever you were crushing on was just a mere physical infatuation. And as soon as, you know, you two are alone and have some time to really get to know each other, suddenly it's lackluster, if
That's
you
right.
will.
And or conversely, you might fancy somebody and think you've got no shot at all until you realize it could work.
It could work. And we have an assortment of those today. I think all the bases are covered in one way or another. It was also very fun watching our friends, vibe with each other.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you need an episode like this every once in a while where it's just, you know.
Things are so heavy.
Things were getting heavy. We needed to go back to, kissing. Kissing and hoping to kiss.
And once again, I will say I was smiling for way too much of this episode. And would anyone have been watching me and seeing what was on TV, they would have thought I was very strange. but Cassie was adorable throughout the episode. Miriam was too, with her support as a friend. Jake was vicious this time. I know the guy wants what he wants, and I'm glad that he didn't fall into something that he wasn't excited about. He was very direct, very direct. And in being direct at certain points, there was no bedside manner. He was bordering on cold.
Mm-hmm. But he also started as adorable.
He did. He very much did. There was an evolution. And then the Ellie Marco situation was a lot of fun.
And both
to
of them
well.
Were also adorable.
They were very adorable. So without further ado, let's get into this episode, shall we?
Take my breath away.
Was season 2, episode 10, Take My Breath Away. Just like you took my thunder away by announcing the episode title before I got there.
Away.
All right, Michael Bublé.
Oh my God, my mom calls me Michael when she's cross with me, and I'm a teenager.
When she's vexed.
That's right.
So, this Canadian air date of this here episode was November 24th, 2002. The U.S. air date was November 9th, 2002. They are catching up. The story was by Aaron Martin and Jan Moore, and the teleplay was by James Hurst and directed by the one, the only, the alliteration of a first name, last name, Stephen Skaney.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Shane, what were you doing at this point in 2002 besides Degrassi?
Besides acting on Degrassi, I was probably doing, some sort of version of exactly what was going on in this episode, to be completely honest.
You have a hair change in this episode.
Oh, yes. You're referring to that. Yes. So I was square in my punk phase, my pop punk phase at this point, and my girlfriend at the time thought it would be a cool idea to dye my hair bleach blonde like so many of the, singers, guitarists, bassists of bands that we were listening to. I think Blink-182 would have been the front runner for a hair change like that. Mm-hmm. And I had no problem with it, and production had no problem with it, but we did it at home because my ex wanted to do it herself. And
wait,
I showed
that
hair,
that dye job was your ex, and she was never credited probably on the show.
No, she was not credited. It's true. And not even a special thanks. But
we should credit her right now.
No. But we not going down that road.
Fair.
We were given the green light, and it was done at home in a sink in a bathroom. And then when I got to set for the first day of filming with that new hair, there it was way too orange and monotone, and they said nah. So they put me through the process and made it a more natural bleach blonde.
Yeah, they were like, "This is too Offspring," and we were looking for Green Day.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
So that's that story.
Incredible. I was in my second last year of high school. I was probably making my mini DV movie, my opus, my high school opus, which sucked and no one will ever get to see it. It was called Edward, and it was like a psychological thriller about a guy who is, anyway, okay. Take My Breath Away comes from the Top Gun soundtrack. It was written by Giorgio Moroder and Tom Whitlock, and it was performed by Berlin. It was released in 1986. It's got that sweepy synth, that slow burn love song style. It literally won the Oscar for best song, by the way.
Oh, did it? Yep. For Top Gun?
Yep.
Awesome.
It became synonymous with intense, almost overwhelming romance, the kind that feels all-consuming. And yeah, it takes your breath away, because let's face it, though, we need to breathe to survive. Just saying.
And that was the kind of love that Tom Cruise desperately needed to comfort him after the passing of Goose.
Correct.
Rest in peace, Goose.
Rest in peace, Goose. Anyway.
All right. Maverick lives on. Okay. Mike, right, you're taking the lead this time. Get into it.
All right. The episode opens in Quan's class. She's sharing C.S. Lewis, who talks about romance being the religion of love. And Manny is immediately gone when Craig walks in to the room. Fantasy sequence ensues. Craig in a tux, full music video mode, singing directly to her. It's a whole vibe.
It is.
Soft lens look, you know, the Vaseline on the lens look. Mm-hmm. And then when it reaches its peak, Manny snaps back to reality. Craig actually just needs the AV cord, and Manny happens to be sitting on it. Mm-hmm. So she's mortified when he asks her to move, and we roll credits.
Mm-hmm. I love fantasy sequences. I love them so much.
Degrassi does them so well. It's like their thing now.
Mm-hmm. And Manny, when she discovers that now she's in like a ball gown, when she looks down like, huh? But she didn't make a meal of it either. It was just a quick realization, and then right back up with the dreamy eyes. Like, oh, thank God I dressed for this moment.
Yeah. Oh, thank God I'm suddenly dressed like Cinderella.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was great.
After the credits, we are in Simpsons class. JT, Toby, and Emma cheekily present a very homemade animation of Simpson. It's like a cutout of Simpson and Spike as wedding cake toppers. And the music is that it's the wedding music theme. What is that music called? Is there a name for that?
The Here Comes the Bride music.
The Here Comes the Bride music.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm going, whoa, y'all just started dating. Don't you think this is a little fast?
Yeah. Well, they were dating for a while before even Emma found out officially, right?
Truly. But the, I don't know. It just threw me. I was like, whoa, we got here quickly. But I guess time passed off screen.
And also, you know, they're in their mid-30s at this point. No time to waste if you feel like you found that person, right?
They know what they want. Maybe they want a baby. Maybe they want a bun in the oven. Bun in the oven. I had to. So Manny, meanwhile, is hyper-fixated on the concept of one true love, and she asks Mr. Simpson how he knows, and that one day she's going to find the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
She also is doodling Craig's name in hearts, like
doodling.
It was an altar.
She'd been working on that for quite a while. Yeah.
The grooves in that page were deep. Yeah. I want to know how many more pages looked like that in that binder. And also, if there were kids sitting next to her, wouldn't they say something? Like, it's just a little obvious. You've got your binder open, it says Craig all over the entire page.
Mm-hmm. They'll do that when it's convenient for them to notice, and when it's not, they won't.
Exactly.
And Emma, the best friend, doesn't even really seem to be clued in to how infatuated and over the moon Manny is for Craig.
Mm-hmm.
She seems more surprised in this episode. It's like, oh, you like him? And it really seems like he likes you. It's I would think Manny would be talking about this every spare chance that she has. But
yeah, probably. Probably. Anyways, in another kind of movie, this piece of paper would be what you would receive from the psychopath killer.
Yeah, along with a hair doll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the hallway, Manny learns that women can propose too, thanks to Spike, because we find out that Spike actually was the one who proposed to Mr. Simpson, which is very cool. Again, we're challenging gender stereotypes.
That we are.
And when Craig strolls by with that million-dollar smile, Emma's like, yeah, girl, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You got this.
She doesn't go right away. Or wait, am I confusing scenes? Is that when they just pass in the hallway really quickly?
Yeah, I think at this point they just pass in the hallway. She doesn't go. She doesn't go to him because she's wondering why. She's later on. She wonders why he hasn't asked her out yet.
That's right. And yeah. Craig was walking with Sean. And once again, I like to point out that it's like Sean and Emma never even knew each other.
Right.
They give you there's no reaction that they give. Know. No loaded, you know, looks and looks away. No.
Nothing. Just nothing. No. It's a classic Degrassi memory wipe situation. Elsewhere, Marco clocks Ellie, who is reading an Edward Gorey book. And they both bond instantly over the dark, weird, cartoony vibes of Edward Gorey. It's cute.
It is cute.
Everybody's so adorable in this episode. Hazel and Paige are clocking Marco and Ellie, and they notice how cute he looks. And then they kind of wonder about maybe Hazel pursuing it. Hazel says, yep, sure, let me just, I'm about to... Let me go to work. Let me do what I do best. And I'm going to go approach him. And here, you know,
Marco was very cute in these episodes and continued to be throughout his time on Degrassi. But it's also so funny, just the idea of young love, where some people are, you know, specifically targeting others. But it's also a time where if someone looks at you the right way and if enough people are encouraging you to go, even if you've never had a thought towards them before, you're just like, I guess I like them now.
Yeah, totally. It's like, hey, Marco's cute. Yeah, let me go ask him out. So Hazel approaches, and now suddenly we've got a love triangle brewing. But Ellie notices this approach, and she's not thrilled.
Nope.
In computer class later, Ellie is sending Marco a secret admirer email. Ashley approaches Ellie, and I think she, like... It's not that she clocks the email, because I don't think she really can decipher it at this point, but she's heard, or she gets the vibe that Ellie is into Marco. And so Ashley starts to kind of kick her tires about that.
Well, did she know it was Marco, or just or that she was into somebody?
That's a good point. Maybe it was. I was like, how does Ashley know about this so quickly?
Because I think Ellie, when she was asked, maybe Ashley asked about Marco specifically, and Ellie said no. And she's like, okay, well, you like somebody. Love is in the air.
Yeah, true.
But I do have a question about this. How are you sending secret messages suddenly to people on the same closed network?
The magic of 2000 era internet. I don't know.
She star 67, that message?
She star 67. Oh, no, because it says she signs off. Maybe she's created like a different account. She signs off. What does she say? She's like, can't rhyme good or something? I don't know. It defies logic.
Okay. We'll let it go. I'll let it go.
I'm willing to forgive. Okay, so Ellie admits to Ashley she's right, and that these are new feelings. She's never been in love before, and obviously it's quite overwhelming for her. She doesn't really know what to do, but apparently sending a rash of secret admirer emails is what you do when you're in that situation. Marco, meanwhile, gets a message. We think it's from Ellie, but it is in fact from Hazel. She's beaten Ellie to the punch, and the love triangle trianglifies.
So that's what happened. I thought because it was anonymous, Marco received that message and just assumed it was Hazel.
Well, when that's he turned the weird around thing, because he gets the message pops up, but maybe she signed it Hazel. Maybe he turns around directly to look at her.
He did, but he gave a confused face trying to figure out who this might have come from.
Yeah.
And he looked around and met Hazel's eyes, and she waved at him.
She's
but
leaving.
I think that was from Ellie, because that's the only thing that would make sense. He thinks he's talking to Hazel.
But then why is Hazel looking up, waiting for him to, like...
I think it was just, she was probably trying to catch his eye anyway, because she's working towards him now, and he turned around, and she was
like, hey, clear to me. It was so unclear to me.
That's what I think. I could be wrong.
No, but I think you're right. Okay. Mm. As much as it pains me to admit it, at the lockers now, Manny is fully spiraling. She is in daydream mode. Again, Tuxedo Craig returns. This time, he's got a pink rose. Mm. Professing his love, he actually barely is able to get out the words, I love you, before she snaps out of it. And I like this beat. Manny just decides, I'm going for it. And she walks up to him in real life, and she just simply states, Craig, I like you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, immediately she regrets it. But
looks
like Craig likes her back. He kind of messes with her a little bit.
That was awesome how he messed with her.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to go
wait, with you?
A movie with you? That was a move of a king.
Yeah, it was good. It was funny.
I feel like in this day and age, we're lacking that direct approach, because from what I know, the younger generation would just consider that to be cringe, right?
Like,
there's no mystery to it. It's
too vulnerable.
You're not beating around the bush. Like, you're just like, I like you. Put them on the spot, and that could be enough to get them to, like, no, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah. So Craig jokes around with her. He has a little bit of fun at her expense. She freaks out, and then when she realizes he's kidding, it's a date. They're going to go to the movies.
And they were both, once again, they were both so cute. Cassie's performance was so endearing. You really, really felt like this moment was actually happening between two people. There was nothing put on about this. Two very strong performances here.
Very true. Mm-hmm. At Joey's now, Craig is getting ready for this date. His first date. Joey is like a proud papa. Although he does have a little bit of a concern that Manny is maybe a little too young for him. But he kind of shrugs off. He's like, yeah, you know, like it's like 11 months, big deal.
Yeah.
Although I guess Joey kind of knows maybe it's not the best match.
Parents always know.
He gives him a pep talk. You're a superstar. You take after your stepfather, aka me. And Joey's off.
Adolescence is entirely about not taking the wisdom
of
to
your
heart that your parents offer offer up to you. Yeah,
totally. Gleefully disobey.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I certainly had my fill of that.
As did I.
At Emma's house, Emma is doing Manny's makeup. Manny is getting ready for her big night out with Craig, and Emma's helping her plan alibis in case her parents call what to say. They are both freaking out. This is like a huge step for Manny and Emma, who's kind of living vicariously through Manny at this point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Although Emma's already been on a date with a boy.
Yes. But I really do like that Emma is playing to a T the best friend card here, because she did like Craig originally.
Yeah.
And there's no bitterness. There's no sabotage. She's just there for her friend and wants everything to go as exactly as hoped.
Yeah, no, she's a girl's girl. Emma is a highly advanced human. She is wise beyond her years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the doorbell rings. Guess who it is? It's Craig. And as soon as he sees Manny, he is stunned. He thinks she's beautiful. He gives her a rose. It is the same rose from those fantasy dreams that Manny was having before, which I thought was a really nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
Emma takes, this was awesome. The Polaroid throwback when Emma jumps in and takes the first date picture. I
don't think
that.
You like your mom, huh? Well, let
it's
me show you
so
something,
totally. The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. I just loved that.
Cute.
It was such a nice throwback.
And then when you see the picture later, the Polaroid, when Manny decorates with it, it looks, they're both deer in headlights, much like Emma and Sean were.
Yeah. I do like how Degrassi repeats these classic, iconic moments that they create. There's an awareness there, I think, of the show.
And there's also a lot of care exercise there. It's, mm-hmm. it's not just awareness. It's care to preserve these beautiful moments and really construct and preserve this delicate universe that's been created there.
Yeah, right? Of course. And this is kind of creepy. Now that you mention it, it's got me thinking like, okay, so Simpson and Spike are engaged. And the last time we saw them go on a date, we got their Polaroid, right? Mm-hmm.
I think there was definitely a Polaroid taken of them at some point, which is the callback to Spike doing that to Emma.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can check. We got to check our notes and
yeah,
check
yeah,
back.
Yeah. And I'm sure our fans listening to this are probably screaming at whatever device.
There was no Polaroid.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't. Yeah.
Set us straight. Set us straight. That's what we're here for. We're doing our best.
Yeah, but if that was the case, I was just thinking like the Manny and Craig Polaroid ends in a completely different way. Right?
Oh, for the first time, it yes.
Totally different, the opposite ending for that Polaroid, which is tragic. And I love how they handled. I love how they handled the cross cutting between the different points of view,
the
memories of the date.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This was such a classy move.
It wasn't quite the same thing, but it reminded me of one of my favorite parts of 500 Days of Summer, which the expectation versus reality.
Mm.
And the funny thing here is we don't know whose understanding or perception of the events is. We didn't get what actually happened. We got Craig's lens and Manny's lens, and now we have to kind of pick and choose.
It's all subjective.
We're mostly on Craig's side, I would think. That was supposed to be the more real one?
I don't know. I don't know if there was supposed to be a real... Well, maybe, now that you think about it. The next day, at school, Manny is recapping to Emma and Liberty. She's now clearly an expert in love. It was perfect, she says. He's definitely the one.
Yeah, yeah.
Cut to Craig telling Jimmy and a bleach blonde spinner that the date was bizarre.
It's so funny thinking back on the immediacy of being head over heels, right? Like we go on a good date and we're in love and we're boyfriend, girlfriend now. There's no warm up to anything. There's no gradual, you know, getting closer and closer. It's like, no, he's the one for me now.
Yeah.
I met my husband.
I met my husband today. Today I met my husband. Dear diary.
I was dating a girl for a few years, and when we broke up, the first person I dated afterwards, after a week, barely a week, she told me that she has never felt this way before, and it was such a turnoff to me because for that exact reason. We weren't kids anymore. We were in our early to mid 20s. I'm like, why? What? This fast, really? That something can't be right. That was
so. You were suspicious.
I was very suspicious. I'm like, I know I'm good, but I don't think anyone's that good. Yeah.
Well, no. Yeah. And this is the thing. And I think when that happens, from my perspective, it's a little like you do sense that the person might be more into the idea that they have in their mind of you mm-hmm. rather than the person that you actually are. And ultimately, if there's a gap between that person that you're being perceived as and who you think you are, you're going to feel that as awkward.
That can
like
be true
we're not
too.
In the same reality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, especially if you're going through a time where you're not too secure with yourself and somebody else is saying that you're the bee's knees. You're like, I whatever you see in me, I know is not there. So
absolutely.
that makes you strange and I need to get away from this. Yeah,
which is why people say you've got to love yourself before you can hope to be loved.
Truly.
Even to be able to love.
Very true. You realize that more and more the older you get.
C.S. Mm-hmm. Lewis would be proud. So we are cross-cutting perspectives now. Manny's version of the date was magical, she says. They went to the movie theater and suddenly there's a carnival here.
Mm-hmm.
So she suggests that they skip the movie altogether, which I don't think Craig actually really wanted to do. There's, you know, balloons, there's clowns, there's cotton candy,
their
fingers
mirrors.
Brush. It's funhouse mirrors. Mm-hmm. Craig seems a little creeped out, but Manny feels that this is totally romantic, and the way that she's remembering it, it's like a beautiful dream,
mm-hmm.
Like her fantasies she had before. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Craig's version It's total chaos. Manny just grabs his hand and starts dragging him everywhere, force feeding him cotton candy, nearly choking him. Mm-hmm. The same exact moments, those quote unquote romantic moments, play out, but very differently from his perspective.
Mm-hmm. But am I the only one? And you could tell us, alumni, who sides with me on this. If I was going on a date right now, and we go to the mall because there's a movie theater there and there just happens to be an impromptu carnival, I'm going to have the time of my life.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, right?
Craig is being a bit of a stick in the mud.
He really is. Yeah. Like, is I was cool disappointed thing. In both versions. He yeah. was not
yeah.
happy
yeah.
as
yeah.
soon as it was not a movie anymore.
Totally. It's like, I just went to the mall.
Yeah.
Like, every time I try to see a movie, there's just a carnival happening.
Guys, you understand, right? Like, you don't want to have fun.
You get right? it,
you
right?
don't want to have fun on a date. Like, laughing people and bright lights and colors and festival foods. Come on.
Yeah.
It's for kids.
Deep fried everything. Pogos.
Anyway, yeah, he really was being a stick in the mud. I was a little disappointed. He couldn't stray from the plan.
Yeah. You know what it should have been? He's deathly afraid of clowns.
That would have been hilarious.
But he couldn't admit it.
He couldn't admit. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the
oh, I wish.
At the game booth now, Manny wins a stuffed horse and she names it. And then she lists the names of all of her other stuffed animals that she has back at home.
Yeah.
Am I talking too much? She says. Craig checks his watch. Then she hurls a ball. She plays the game. She hurls a ball trying to hit something for another prize. Mm-hmm. And that ball ricochets straight into his forehead.
Even though the immediate ricochet trajectory was so different.
That's right.
So different. I don't know if everyone here remembers their geometry, but.
Of course. But physics, we've only got so much time to shoot this shot.
Gotcha. Yeah. For TV.
Yeah, Craig, he looks at her and, you know, she's kind of trying to tend to his goose egg, I guess, presumably. And in that moment, he sees how sweet she is. So he tells Jimmy and Spinner, you know, like, unfortunately, she's kind of like a kid. She kind of reminds me of my 5-year-old sister.
Best
I wonder
line.
Why, by the
best
way.
Best line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, best line. Mm-hmm.
I bet the writers were so proud.
Yeah, they were so proud of themselves. They're like, can we? Should we?
Yeah.
Yeah. We got it.
To remind everybody, that was as close to a fourth wall break as you could get in the show. Because Joey's daughter and Craig's half-sister is actually Cassie Steele's younger sister, Alex Steele. So,
that's right.
Yes. That's there are right. very good reasons why Manny would have reminded him of what's her character name again?
Angela. But also Craig thinks she's really sweet and he doesn't know what to do because he doesn't have the guts to let her down.
He says that she's young and he didn't realize it before the date, but on the date just couldn't be denied that they were in a different, you know, part
it
of
it might have
lives.
Been the naming of the stuffed animals thing.
I think that could have put him over the edge. Yeah. Everything else up to there, I think he was splitting hairs, like the cotton candy and the carnival, yeah. sure. But the like, naming
dude,
of your stuffed animals,
just choke on it.
Yeah, maybe wait till the second or third date before you tell us about your stuffed animal family and all their names. Yeah.
So back at school, Manny is reliving her version. The ball hit? Well, he took it like a champion. He was a little awkward. She tended to his goose egg and they almost kissed. But at the last moment, Craig pulls away.
Mm-hmm.
But Emma theorizes that maybe he was just being respectful, right? Just respectful of time. He was trying to get you home before your curfew. So he's actually just a really great guy. And I think this is where we're realizing Emma is starting to see the signs like, oh, he's not that into her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Liberty co-signs this take and Manny reframes it. Yeah, he's passionate and he's punctual. That's the kind of guy I like.
That was Liberty that said that.
Yeah, that's right.
That was hilarious because that would make sense for her, of course.
Meanwhile, Ellie keeps the secret admirer emails going. Meet me after school, she writes in this one. And we see Marco receive the message. He's into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is coming to a head, although we don't know what his reaction is going to be.
Well, he thinks he's going to meet Hazel.
Yeah, but he kind of smiles a little bit, doesn't he? He kind of goes like, yeah, I could get. So I don't know. I'm a little confused by
this. He does, but it's also like, it's nice to know that you're liked by someone, even if you know you're going to have to let them down, right?
Yeah, right? for sure.
And I mean, Marco has two reasons, because he's not into Hazel, as we find out, but he's also in the closet right now. No one knows that.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, it's still nice to know that someone has a crush on you, especially in high school.
Yeah. Very true. Craig tries to talk to Manny. Clearly, there's something on his mind, but when she starts gushing about how perfect the date was, he completely bails. Emma sees this one coming, clearly, and she tells Manny, hey, listen, like, maybe you should slow down because you could get hurt. But Manny wants to step on the gas pedal. She's definitely not slowing down.
And yeah, the excuse was Craig's just moody. I'm wondering why Manny already knows that he's moody, or if this is just something that she came to on her own, because he can be very hot and cold.
Right.
Which we know is going to
tying in the bipolar.
Worse and worse.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen it. It's reasonable to assume that the other kids at school kind of know him as, you know, a little bit up and down. So again, this is really good foreshadowing that they're building in here. Really good character.
Yeah, very much so. But Manny will not be denied. She just wants to go and try to cheer him up because that's her specialty, as she tells Emma.
Yeah, for sure. In the courtyard, which we never shot in. How many times have we used this tiny little... This was a courtyard in the main offices, like the production office.
No, not quite the same one. This was the one that was just... it was next to Quan's class. Across the hall from there was a small courtyard, not the real one where the boardroom was.
Oh, I'm thinking of the real courtyard, which was okay, strange.
This was the fake courtyard.
This was the fake version of that kind of a thing. Okay, that's like a very small courtyard. Yeah,
very small.
Thanks for the clarification.
They called it the Zen Garden.
Yeah, it's the Zen Garden.
Yes,
right, the Zen Garden.
Too small to be a courtyard.
Ellie is waiting in said Zen garden. Marco shows up thinking he's meeting Hazel, but Ellie confesses it was actually her. Good on Ellie to just come clean with it. After she confesses, she immediately panics and leaves.
Yeah, she did not like Marco's cryptic reaction to the news.
Yeah. Well, I think she just like, I could tell she was like, you know what? This was a mistake. This was stupid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got to get out of here. This is horribly awkward. I don't want to do this.
A bold move from someone that doesn't make bold moves on the regular.
She's fairly quiet and keeps to herself at this point. So this is she's going out on a limb for sure, but she gets a little too out there.
Mm-hmm.
Then outside of the school, her phone rings. Guess who? It's Marco. He tells her to turn around and she sees him on the other side of the schoolyard. Also on his phone, but they don't. I like how this conversation unfolds. They're both on the phone across from each other having this conversation. And Marco tells her he didn't reject her. He thought he was meeting Hazel, but he was gonna let her down gently because she's not into Hazel. And then he goes full girls like Ellie Nash. You know, she blushes. And I think kind of implies
still
like
holding the phone.
Still holding the phone. Well, actually, he closes it, doesn't he? On that.
Well,
on
he that. Put his phone down first, but she still had hers up.
She still had hers up.
With his Marco swagger, he then just took it out
and
of her
hangs
hand.
It. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It. Yeah. I loved epic. It. Yeah. It was a beautiful shot with Ellie in the foreground and Marco in his, you know, very noticeable yellow shirt in the background, walking down the steps and then getting closer. And I just had this fantasy that they would be on the phone the whole time, but he would just be getting closer throughout the whole thing until he came into focus.
Yeah.
I mean, if this was a parody, like they could have really made a meal of
him taking her phone and closing it, and then like taking her glasses off of her face and closing those and putting them away.
Totally.
Anyway,
it was, could have milked that moment for sure.
Uber swagger on Marco's part there.
Yeah. Marco swagger.
Yeah.
So Ellie is completely smitten and maybe a little flush, and they make a date. It's on.
Yay.
So somebody's door closes and another person's window opens.
Yes.
Isn't that life? And then the crash comes. Manny in the hallway has decorated Craig's locker. Mm-hmm. Full of hearts, that photo that they snapped on the first date, the Polaroid. And it's a little bit much, frankly. I mean, it's very sweet. I would be thrilled if I felt the same way about somebody who had done that for me.
That's the key.
Yeah. And Craig sees it, and I think he kind of realizes, like, oh no, I can't keep stringing along. So I got to.
Yeah. That really put the nail in the coffin for him. If he was on the fence to the smallest of degrees, that put him over the edge.
Yeah. Yeah. I always look at these moments like these art direction moments, and there are art direction people. They loved, or it seemed like they loved their jobs, and they loved making the gack, right?
Yeah.
So like the locker decorations, I can only imagine what was secretly written, the details of what was written on those pieces of paper. Cause you'd be on set and you'd have a lot of time standing in a scene while you were shooting it. So you'd get to kind of like actually look at some of the things that they had written, and there's obviously lots of hidden jokes in there.
They were all inside jokes. Yeah.
All inside jokes. Lots of crew members' names.
Mm-hmm. When they did the movie posters, anything that was written in the bottom, like, you know, produced by, directed by, all that stuff. Sometimes it would just be a run on sentence that it was just meant to make people laugh. Speaking of which, I forgot to say this when we recorded for the last episode, Mirror in the Bathroom. When Toby and JT got to that wrestling website where it was giving pointers, did you happen to see two of our stand-ins, that there was a wrestler and then two of the arm candy girls
were our
stand-ins? That was Krista and Vivian.
That was from Viv. My God.
Yeah. And I, for the life of me, I can't remember our friend who was in the middle, but he was on the crew too. He might have been Grip, or Sets, but yeah, those were all our friends.
That's so funny to go to a mm-hmm. Grip and be like, hey,
you're big in hulking.
Get up in a luchador mask and we'll take some photos for the show.
When's the last time you tailgated? Can we paint your face two different colors?
Yeah. It's funny because like I to go back to that episode and that moment, I saw that's a different kind of wrestling.
Yeah.
That's like WWF wrestling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they all have experience in Greco-Roman wrestling, I would assume, right?
Yeah.
They have to. I don't think you could not have a foundation of real wrestling if you're going to be a pro wrestler, even though it's choreographed, because they're still all real wrestling moves to a degree.
Sorry, not WWF, WWE. WWF is the panda.
Right. Well, when they won the lawsuit.
Clearly, I don't know anything about wrestling. All right, we're back to Craig, and he is looking a little confused and like he's got to let Manny down at this point. He's looking a little sad that he's got to do this now. But Ashley walks up and interrupts them for Craig to sign a petition. It's an anti-GMO, which for all of you who don't know, it's genetically modified foods mm-hmm. petition. And Manny doesn't know what it is, so she makes a comment. What did she say?
So Ashley, told her what the acronym meant, and Manny said, "So is that good?" And they both just stared her down. Like, I'm gonna go.
Like, ugh, that was this uncultured troglodyte. It was a little mean.
Yeah, it was mean.
It was mean. It was mean. But it's clear. Manny, she just can't. She can't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Craig's into different things. She mm-hmm. can't hang, and the gap between them is suddenly made very clear. And Manny realizes it, and then mm-hmm. Manny asks Craig in a sort of like a desperate move not to talk to Ashley anymore.
Yeah, that was very surprising.
It was intense.
Yeah, like, I don't think you should talk to her anymore. That was almost possessive, like they've been in a relationship for a while, right?
And I think it was like a last-ditch attempt to control what's happening, clearly unstoppable.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do you think it was a, I'm just asking, because that moment stood out to me. Do you think that was Manny going, I think she's after you, and you two obviously have some sort of connection, or... That girl was very mean to me, and I think you should stand up for me by not talking to this girl
I think it's
anymore.
The latter, and I think it's like, if we can be in this together against other people, it's like a bid to collude. It's a bid to try to keep this connection going, but it's a very extreme and last-ditch attempt to do that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that was, yeah.
And it backfires, and he sees right through it. He doesn't even acknowledge it, really. He's like, you know, this locker, it's a lot. And she's like, is it the locker? And he's like, yeah, it's not entirely the locker that I don't like. It's you. Which, you're right, comes out quite direct. But I think he just, like, I don't know, like, kudos to just saying it. It hurts.
To just shutting it down?
He doesn't sugarcoat it. I'm a sugarcoater.
I can be in either camp depending on what the situation calls for. But yeah, no, there is something to just, you know, band-aid, clean off, and let everyone deal with their hurt but move on faster versus just, you know, stringing people along, which is always worse in the long run.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't like hurting people. I don't like
that's true. But in the moment, watching it as a fly on the wall, it looked really cold. Jake,
truly.
There was no emotion in his eyes. It was truly just, shut off.
And that really hits Manny. She sinks, and on her realization that it is most definitely over, we freeze.
And I guess this is the catalyst that gets, I didn't realize it at the time, but we know in the next few seasons, Manny really, really, really tries to mature herself in the way that she dresses, in the way that she acts, in her sexuality. So this is probably the beginning of that, because we know she ends up with Craig later on as well. And there's obviously a difference for her entire energy. And
Yeah.
Good episode, though.
Great episode. I loved it. It was fun. It was heartbreaking. It took me right back to that place. God, I always remember that, the breakup in front of English class, and I was in grade 7 and she was in grade 8, and she told me that she met somebody else, and I was floored. I was like, she was my first love ever, and my first kiss, and this moment at the end with the lockers just took me right back there.
It's terrible. It's terrible being broken up with when you're not expecting it, even when you are, but especially when you're not. Like, it's hard to breathe.
Yeah.
You're never so aware of the inner workings of your body as you are standing there trying to process what happens. It's a shock to the system. It really is.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And the younger you are, when it's the first time you felt that, not like it really gets easier as you get older. Every heartbreak comes with its own challenges, but the first one is earth-shattering.
Yeah, because you don't know that you are strong enough to survive it yet.
Or that you will ever have the capacity to feel that way about someone else again.
Of course. And when parents, that was it. That was my one chance.
Mm-hmm. And when parents are like, don't worry, you'll get over this and you'll find someone else. That's the last thing you want to hear, and you don't believe it anyway. Yeah.
There's plenty of fish in the sea. We need to just stop saying that.
Yes. Yeah. Shut down the website right now.
Shut down the Plenty of Fish website. I did that for a while. Okay. Let's get to some questions. As you all know, we love hearing feedback and questions from you. If you want to reach out to us, please send us emails at dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We've also got a Discord, Dgrads Alumni, and we've got an ongoing conversation there. We like to chime in from time to time. And we also have a Patreon channel. If you subscribe, you get access to video versions of these podcasts early, and we also also sometimes do bonus content for you.
Yes.
So let's get to, I've got a Discord question here.
All right.
This one is, this is going to jog our memories here. It's a real mind bender because I don't know if I can answer this, but Laura says, hey guys, loving this episode. You mentioned that Craig's scene in the drama class sounded like an audition scene.
Yes.
So I was wondering if you guys could remember which scenes you had for your auditions. Thanks so much and looking forward to more. Do you remember?
I do. My audition is out there because it was a DVD extra on one of the seasons. So it's out there somewhere. And it was, I think it was about Spinner knowing that he was not the smartest kid.
Hold on. I'm watching it right now.
No, you're not.
Yes,
and
I
please
am.
Don't. No, Shane. You're not.
Oh my God. Shane.
No.
Why am I acting like this?
Oh God.
Last
you really are watching it.
We got back this test.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mike, please stop.
No, dude, this is good. I'm enthralled.
No, oh my God.
Dude, I like this.
Yeah, is a good scene. So, but it was, thanks. But it was a monologue that was separate from the show. It wasn't anything that was ever used on the show.
I noticed that. Yeah.
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 And what about yours?
Oh, I don't even remember, but I do remember I was in there with Danny. Mm. Daniel Clark. So I think it was probably the scene where Danny and I go at it and I get a bloody lip because, you know, Danny is a wrestler. Sean. Yeah. Sean is a wrestler. And yeah, so we're sitting there outside the principal's, outside Radich's office, waiting to go in. And I'm kind of like, you know what? You handle yourself pretty good, Cameron. You're cool. We can hang. That was the audition scene.
So there, like you didn't have a monologue in your first round. It was right to script and screen.
It might have been a monologue, but I think it was another monologue. It was a monologue, but it was not written into the show.
Okay.
I think it was the same exact thing. Cause I do remember slightly feeling like, when is that scene going to come up? It never happens.
I couldn't believe, looking back, I didn't realize until I got the job, but that audition was done in the boardroom with the Emmys set up and everything.
Yeah. Intimidating.
Linda was sitting on the other side of the camera and Celik Sasanasi was filming.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, I'm actually in here with the exec producer of the show being filmed by one of the actors from the original. But I was so nervous. I didn't clock any of that and didn't think to ask.
Yep. Totally. Well, it was my second audition too, because I had auditioned for Dylan initially. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, we want you to read for Jay. So I came back in.
And we're happy it worked out that way.
Very happy. Very happy. Anyways, thanks for the question, Laura.
Great question. Yeah, you, as an actor, you develop a sixth sense for when you watch a TV show. Certain lines of dialogue are too perfect to not obviously have been what the material that was used for that actor to audition for that role.
Mm-hmm. Here's one from Grace. Another Discord question from Grace, who asks, who are some of your favorite guest stars that came on? Because Degrassi had a lot. It's true. We did have a lot of guest stars over the years.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. I mean, I would say just because I had I worked with her in this scene and it was very fun and romantic and quirky. Shirley Douglas, who is Kiefer Sutherland's mom. She's the queen of theater. She's had a huge career in theater and film and television. She's like a massive star, but she is Kiefer Sutherland's mother, and she's also Tommy Douglas's daughter. And Tommy Douglas was the guy who fought for universal healthcare in Canada. So cool. He's actually like kind of a folk hero of the country. And what a crazy talented family. Like, what's in the blood? What's in the water? I don't know how that happened, but
when you got it, you got it, you know?
You just got it. It was Tommy Douglas who gave birth to he had a daughter who became a huge star, and then she became the mother of Kiefer. It was crazy. Anyway.
And married a huge star as well.
And married Donald Sutherland.
Yes.
And she was the most generous actor I've ever worked with. She pimped me so hard in those scenes, and for that's sort of like I guess it's like improv talk for like, she set me up. Like mm-hmm. She gave me so much to work off of. And she would always flip it up and change this. We do the tango scene later when I'm trying to get Manny back into theater school because the sex tape switch up, and she's the dean of the theater school that Manny's trying to get into. So I have to woo her. So I'm like mm-hmm. massaging her feet and doing the tango with her and like with a rose. And I have to like seduce her. And it was so easy to seduce her. It was just, anyway, she was delightful. Rest in peace. She passed away a few years ago. I'll never forget working with her. She was a tremendous woman.
That's very cool. Yeah, yeah. I loved when Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes were there. My number one above all else was when I got to work with Colin Mochrie in our final episode.
Yes.
I'm sure people have heard this story, but at the press conference where Degrassi, The Next Generation was being announced to the world for the first time, this was me being as green as can be as an actor. And now I'm about to sit at, you know, a press event and be announced to the world, both as a show and as a new actor. And I was such a huge fan of Whose Line Is It Anyway. Mm-hmm. My mom and I used to have VHS recorded copies. Like the entire tape was just Whose Line episodes. And then I'm standing outside there with my mom and dad trying to like navigate this weird day that I had ahead of me. And I just look over my mom's shoulder and Colin Mochrie, who's also a tall guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't look that tall on TV, but he's definitely over 6 feet. He was just standing right behind her. Couldn't believe it. And then in my final Degrassi episode, he played, I think he was your uncle, right?
Yeah.
Jay's uncle. He was the divorce lawyer that Spinner and Emma went to try to get their marriage annulled, yeah, and then decided that they didn't want to do it. But he was so funny and he was also so giving. It was a dream come true. But I had to be so serious in that scene that I couldn't, there couldn't be any comedy from Spinner's side going back towards Colin. And all I wanted to do was have a good time, but it was still.
Oh,
it was,
you had your one chance to like, Whose Line Is It Anyway,
yeah,
with Colin,
yeah,
Mochrie, and you just, mm-hmm, your hands were tied.
Yeah. And it was also cool. Like, he came to our home, you know, one of these Canadian icons in comedy and such a good guy is now on my show. It was such a crazy moment.
Wild.
For me.
I bet he ad-libbed a bunch.
He probably did, but his performance was not over the top. It was very small and contained, and it was still so funny. That guy is just, he's so precise.
Oh, he's such a genius. I loved it.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it for us this week, folks. Thank you for those questions. We always like to reach out the offer. If you like the podcast, please get on your podcast downloading apps and review us, leave comments, give us all the stars that you see fit. And mm-hmm, it just really helps the algorithm find us, because there's mm-hmm Degrassi fans out there still don't know that we exist, and we want to reach them.
Yes. Subscribe. Tell everybody you know. Shout from the rooftops. Shout underground. Do whatever. Fly banners across the sky. That's something that people don't do all that much anymore.
Underground. I like the underground thing. Get into the sewers, right, and shout in the sewers.
You never know what kind of people you'll find down there.
We're shaking the trees.
That's right.
We're looking under seat cushions.
And once again, with Patreon, we love all of our subscribers there, and thank you so much for the support. If you do want to see our faces, it's only available on Patreon for not that much of a monthly commitment. And lots of fun stuff available for you there, including the ad-free early edition video episode. So this has been another D-Grads podcast. Hope you had a great time. We sure did. I am Shane Kippel. That is Mike Lobel. And we will see y'all next week.